I'm just going to read the translation. The translation again. This is Vadhura speaking to Maitreya Rishi. "But my dear sir, I am obliged to you, because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea." So, I was just doing a little bit of reading around Maitreya Rishi. And I hadn't realized that Maitreya Rishi is the third most commonly spoken person in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In all 18 cantos, out of all the speakers, he's the third most attributed to in terms of verses. So we have Sukadev Goswami first, then Krishna, and then Maitreya Rishi. Just to help devotees get to the right place where we are in the Bhagavatam and in terms of chronology, because sometimes, you know, we can lose sight of that when we're going through the purports. So Krishna's just left the planet, and Vidura, just before he left the planet, he had a meeting, and he met with Uddhav. And as he was meeting with Uddhav, Maitreya Rishi came upon the two of them. Now, Maitreya Rishi was a devotee of the Lord, but not a pure devotee of the Lord at that time. His devotion was mixed with jnana. And so actually, when Krishna was imparting pure devotional service to Uddhav, and this is the Uddhav Gita, he actually spoke directly to Uddhav, and Maitreya Rishi heard while he was standing there and listened. And by listening submissively, he also became a pure devotee. Now, Uddhav was very anxious to follow Krishna's instruction. As Krishna was saying, "I'm leaving, but you go to Bhadrika Ashram and there you can take shelter of Naranarayan and continue to hear my glories and engage in my service." When Vidura comes upon Uddhav, he's just about to leave to go to Bhadrika Ashram. And Vidura wants to actually take shelter of Uddhav and hear Krishna's glories from him. He wants to hear pure devotional service distilled, as well as have any contradictions clarified. Now, Maitreya Rishi has also become a pure devotee by this point, and Uddhav being anxious to get to Bhadrika Ashram, but also equally, and Prabhupada explains this, he doesn't want to transgress the principles of respect and etiquette, actually says, you know, you should actually go and accept Maitreya Rishi as your spiritual master. Because, and Prabhupada explains that although Uddhav and Maitreya Rishi are both pure devotees, and Uddhav may have actually even been qualified before Maitreya Rishi was, because Maitreya Rishi is older than him and also more equal in age to Vidura. Right? Uddhav is like Krishna's age, and Krishna and Uddhav, by society standards, are by age junior to Maitreya Rishi. Maitreya Rishi was around when Lord Ram was around. Here we are where Vidura has now, you know, the last couple of chapters, he's been conversing with Maitreya Rishi, asking him in detail about creation, about the Lord's external energies, about how he is everywhere in one place. And really, actually, and particularly up until this verse, he asks Maitreya Rishi questions that seem contradictory. So all the inconceivable things about God, the kind of things that people, especially people who are impersonalists, might use as reasons to believe that God is not a person, or he is a person, but that person is secondary to the energy, and that actually we're all God. So this is Maitreya Rishi's now gone through a process of explaining to Vidura. And this is the false idea that Vidura is, one aspect of the false idea that Vidura is referring to, that we are God. Because ultimately is that that idea, that false idea that I am in the center and the world revolves around me, that is the crux of identifying with this transient sense of who we are, right? It's always changing, but the crux of us holding on to it is that everything that goes on around me is because of me, right? I am the cause. And I'm also the effect. So I'm causing everything and it all affects me. Right? This is really what it means to be in the center, doesn't it? You know, if we really get down to the essence of what does it mean to be in the center of everything? What does it mean to be the controller? Because when you, I mean, we hear it a lot, oh, we came here because we wanted to be the controller. That's such a, we have to be quite humble to really accept that I want to be the controller. But when we break it down and understand that, what does that mean, me wanting to be in the center? It's we see ourselves as cause and effect. And when we take ourselves as being the cause and effect, as the absolute reality, that's when illusion manifests. And rather than accountability, right? There's a difference. There's a different, accountability means there's a degree of cause and effect from me, but it's not absolute. Okay, so sometimes what happens is when people come to Krishna consciousness, we try and get rid of all accountability and bypass everything and then and mistake that for being surrender. So it's this, and Vidura's questions are really important. They're really important for us. They're really important for our intelligence, even on this path of Prema Bhakti, where we have, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, been given Shraddha. Actual Shraddha is, and when we look at Shraddha to Prem, according to Madhura Kadambini, Shraddha isn't just faith in God, it's faith in Krishna. Faith in Krishna. So we've been given the seed of pure devotional service. And when we look at Kanishtha, Madhyam and Uttam, according to the teachings of our Goswamis, they're actually referring to pure devotees. So even at Shraddha, one is considered a pure devotee by faith. Does that make sense? So it's not, you know, mixed with Gyan, it's not mixed with karma, it's not mixed with, you know, bhakti, mukti, siddhis. It's actually that the faith, the seed of it, is rooted in Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Prema Bhakti is what I'm aspiring for. Even if our covering means that our understanding is mixed. So I hope that bit's clear. So for us, it's still important, these conversations. We may come across these conversations in the Bhagavatam and think, oh, these are just for the impersonalists or those who haven't accepted Krishna as a supreme. But actually, by hearing and understanding the logic and reasoning, it breaks down misconceptions, false ideas we've had about being in the center, which we're carrying probably for many, many lifetimes, but they may not be manifesting right now. But they're sitting there binding our sense of identity, to whatever we accept as reality, and this idea of being the cause and effect at all times. And this idea of being the cause and effect both is what gives rise to our happiness and also makes us suffer. When we are suffering, we also get preoccupied with being the cause and also preoccupied with being the only person who can affect change, right? It's quite suffocating. I mean, we are all familiar with virtual and vicarious realities. Everybody is. Anybody born in modern times is familiar with virtual and vicarious realities, because everybody here has probably come across at least a TV in their lifetime. And we seek them out. We seek out this vicarious or virtual life. You know, even in this verse, it describes how our reality here is like having your head cut off in a dream. When you wake up from it, it's like, oh, that wasn't really of much consequence. But when you're living it, when you're in the dream and someone chops off your head, it feels so real. You can actually feel the emotional impact of it. You can feel the thoughts that go with it. I don't want this. My life is coming to an end. You may even feel physical pain, even so much so that when you wake up, you may still be shaken up and you may still feel some residue in your body of everything you're feeling. And yet we go out and we seek more virtual realities in our daytime, right? We watch TV programs. People watch binge watch things on Netflix, you know. Or you may even get a virtual headset. And do anybody here tried those virtual reality headsets? They're extremely immersive. And the more immersive and uninterrupted the virtual or vicarious reality is, the more we will identify with it. Okay? You will hear people of my generation and older tell you that we were less addicted to television because it was interrupted. It was interrupted by breaks. You couldn't binge watch. You couldn't, you know, it was hard. You had to video record things. And if you missed it, you missed it. Plus, we had a lot more of a physical life, right? We say it with pride. Yeah, we're not as addicted. But quite frankly, for the world we grew up in, we were distracted. We were looking for that vicarious reality, but it was interrupted. So it had less of a hold. As you go then into kind of the no ads, immersive, you know, digital television, right? You can immerse yourself even more. right? And identify, even if you had a TV, I think anybody who's immersed themselves in anything, any other vicarious reality, can speak about how the more immersed you are, the more continuously you are in that, you will identify more and more, right? You start to feel what the character feels, isn't it? We see this even in our life. Any problem we pick up or any affection we pick up in this life through relationship or activity, the more we do it, the more we're immersed on it, the more continuous it is in our life, the more we identify with the pushes and pulls of it, the more we get caught up in cause and effect. Even when you're watching TV, don't you scream at the television when it's a horror film? Get out, there's someone there with a knife, or you sit there trying to predict what's going to happen next. It's a story, and we get invested in it as if we can influence what's going to happen. Oh my God, you're so stupid. What are you doing? You know, oh, that's so cute. You know, so we get so absorbed. And then you've got these virtual reality glasses. They're so immersive, you can't see anything outside of it. You can watch Netflix and TV, but someone in the house is usually going, get up, have something to eat, do this chore. Somebody's trying to wake you up. But when you're in the VR, if you've ever tried it, I haven't, I'm a bit scared of them. If you've ever tried it, people who've tried it, Shraddha Gokul Nand Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Gornita Ki Jai. If you've ever tried it, you'll see you are cut off from everything else. Okay, you are cut off. They cover your ears, your eyes are completely submerged. So your mind only has one place to go, that which is presented to you, okay, in 3D. But you know what? We don't have to go to any of these things. Our mind is like our own set of virtual reality glasses. It is completely immersive. Because what goes in our mind actually is blinkered to what's going on around us. Completely blinkered. Okay? And this is the thing. What we digest, everything we digest, is somehow or another getting absorbed and incorporated into a story we are already playing in our mind. Okay, just like, so when you're dreaming, right? There's different types of dreams, and it's outside of the scope of today to go into all the different types of dreams. But generally, whatever we're dreaming about and whatever type of dream we're in, the influences that are going on around our body, the sounds, the smells, the activities, they can often get incorporated in the dream, right? But we pull it into whatever reality we're having in the dream. So if in the dream, you're walking in a forest and a fire engine goes past, your brain, your mind might compute that as, okay, there is a fire, but then the fire might start in the forest that you're walking in the dream. So that dream can become a nice forest walk to a horrific forest fire. So in this same way, we have our virtual reality given to us by this mind. It's embedded in the subtle body. It's been developed, picked up. That story's been written by us, okay, based on what we've exposed ourselves to, based on what we've digested, both consciously and unconsciously. And don't be fooled. Your mind will make you think that those things you intentionally and purposefully listen to are the things that have the strongest impact on you. Yes, they have a strong impact. But actually, those things that are going on in the background, okay, those things we don't always notice, the subtle, and the more frequently we are exposed to it, has a far bigger impact, because it goes in late, it goes into the mind, into the subtle body, and it lays dormant and latent. And the more and more and more it happens, the more likely it is to come to the surface. And we can often then find ourselves acting on impulses, on ideas that might feel like inspiration, might feel like a fear, might feel like something that's intuitive, but it isn't intuitive. It's just we've been exposed to it so many times, we think it's come from us. Okay? There is nothing really original in the mind or the subtle body. And when we think it's original, then that's when we take credit or hold ourselves excessively responsible. The thing is, what we expose ourselves to, you know, breeds these desires, breeds these ideas, breeds a story, a sense of identity that we want, one that we feel will reinforce for us more and more that I am the cause and the effect. When Krishna says, that he reciprocates with our desires as the super soul. Now, this mind is our communication. That's what Krishna's watching. What are you thinking about? And as a result of what you're thinking about, what are you doing and what are you saying? I will fulfill. I will fulfill. So, you know, whether it's this world becoming wider, who we're comparing ourselves, becoming wider because we're on digital media or we're someone's watching, you know, excessive amounts of programs. Those stories, somewhere they're getting incorporated, the ideas from those stories. We don't. Just because it's happening silently, it doesn't mean it's not happening. It's a slow poison. And, you know, I'm in danger of sounding fanatical, but this is not fanaticism. This is just how the mind works. This is just the nature of our psychology. This is the nature of our neurology. This is not fanaticism. You know, if we understand how our mind and nature works, then we can go about going, okay, all right, maybe I have these habits. Maybe those habits are even socially acceptable. Maybe those habits are even something that lots of devotees are doing. Does that still mean it's healthy? Right? Lots of devotees go to bed late and wake up early and are sleep deprived. Lots of devotees go to bed late and wake up late. Okay, one saying, I've always got to get up for Mangalarati at the expense of my health. The other one saying, well, I've got to make sure I'm well rested because then I can perform my sadhana. Both are right to a relative degree, but neither are living in a way that's ideal and best for the mind and sadhana. Does this make sense? So there's a difference between fanaticism and actually understanding something and making a choice to live in the better way or the way that's best for us. Fanaticism is when we just hold on to something so tightly without really understanding it and almost impose it, not just on ourselves, but on other people. So anyway, the reason I'm going into this whole, the mind creates this, you know, virtual reality for us. This virtual reality really is designed, it creates the latest design or story to keep our sense of identity here engaged, okay? Keep our sense of identity in this world engaged in being at the center. The world is revolving around me. And so we then act and get into more of a, bring that kind of achievement mindset. I've got to get and I've got to achieve something, a position, a role, a situation, a relationship that keeps reinforcing what cause am I going to be at the root of and what is going to be the effect that comes from it. I know I was just thinking about before I go into the latter part of this verse, I was just thinking about the different types of reality we adopt and we hold on to, even within our community. And, you know, over the decades, we've had so many different successes, right? We've had so many wonderful successes. We've also had a lot of challenges. And the challenges that people generally tend to talk about a lot are challenges we have in our leadership. Right? We tend to often look to leadership, say, where are the challenges? And often something that we may hear, we may be familiar with it in our own lives, or we may have heard it when trying to understand what's going on in leadership, when there are problems, when there are struggles, especially when people maybe behave in a way that's not healthy, fall away, etc. And it was something somebody said to me recently, and I've heard before, and you'll recognize this, it's lonely at the top. It's lonely at the top. You know, that's a very relative truth. It's not an absolute truth. Because who's at the top? Krishna. Is he ever lonely? No. Is he ever? He's never lonely. He's never, not in any shastra has he said, you know, it's lonely being God. He's never said that. Not to anybody. So this, it's lonely at the top. It's a paradigm that's not a paradigm that's created by being God conscious, by being Krishna conscious, or being self-aware. It's actually a paradigm that's created when we put the transient ego in the center. If we are feeling like this, we can ask ourselves, what did I sacrifice? So sacrifice is consciously, And what did I avoid unconsciously or consciously unconsciously to get to where I am? To get to where I am. See, when we're looking at all these different virtual realities of becoming, you know, the center of the cause and the effect, and we bring this into, and we do, it's inevitable. When we first come to Krishna consciousness, what is it that nobody joins an institution, right? We follow people, and then we try and create our place in the community, looking at various things, our purpose, how our varna is applied, how our skills are applied, what role we might take, who our relationships will be with, you know? And the reason I'm saying we can ask ourselves, what did I sacrifice consciously and what might I have avoided to find myself in this situation where I feel lonely? Whether you're at the top of an entire temple, the top of the GBC, the top of your family, the top of your friend circle, at the top of your little subgroup of service, what is it that led to that? Because again, this whole virtual reality of being the cause and effect means we also then end up interpreting Shastra in that way as well. I'm going to give you an example. Okay, I was in the fourth chapter, just a few chapters before Prabhupada is explaining in one purport that familial affection makes the world go round. It's what binds us here. Okay, now somebody immediately, if the mind's like, okay, I want to be Krishna conscious straight away. Now, I want to be Krishna conscious straight away. That one can very easily and quickly mistake this familial affection makes the world go around. This is either good or bad, okay? Or this is right or wrong. Okay, I've got to disconnect from this completely in order to achieve, be Krishna conscious, be seen to be Krishna conscious, know from other people that I'm Krishna conscious. It's not good or bad or right or wrong. It's just simply a description of how things work in this world, okay? They do work because we have affection for family. That is why things work in the way that they do. That's why there's reproduction, that's why there's creation, that's why there's building of homes, that's why there's communities, that's why there's jobs, that's why there's cooking and eating and hugs and cuddles and joy and then distress and grief. That's why those things are there. That's how this world works. But we are also repeatedly told that, but you bring Krishna consciousness into that alongside that paradigm, bring in the spiritual paradigm, then actually that same thing that makes this world go around will free us and make us Krishna conscious. Okay, but when we read it as bad and we want to achieve Krishna consciousness primarily by measuring it based on the quantity of what we're doing, achieving of projects, roles, numbers, right? This is all quantitative. Right, it's quantitative. Again, it feeds the whole, I'm the cause and this is the effect. Right? Versus, actually, what is it? We're becoming Krishna conscious. That's a state of being, okay? It's becoming a state of being that we're told time and time again is received. It's received. I was listening to, Sachinanda Maharaj, these really beautiful Karthik inspirations and meditations every single day. And they carry much depth. And one, he was being very, very, you know, he has this very honest approach to sharing his realizations while he's in his immersive japa during this Karthik period. And he was sharing in one that, you know, even with the best endeavor, sometimes the reciprocation and the ability to chant, actually, even with the best endeavor, actually is really only, you realize, it's only to do with the mercy of Krishna. It's Krishna who allows us to receive the ability to be able to call him with love. And that there's no fixed technique, but we continue. We keep trying, hoping that we will, and confident, hoping confidently that we will attract his mercy. So this state of being, this state of receiving Krishna consciousness, receiving the mercy by which all of that becomes uncovered. It's qualitative. And we're not used to living in a qualitative world. We're so used to, and we perpetuate it in our communities, unfortunately. You know, we if you look at anything of quality and strong and sturdy, trees take sometimes centuries, but those trees that are centuries old, they're so resilient. But they've taken centuries to become that strong, that tall, that, you know, the roots are deep, the trunk is thick. Weeds sprout up very quickly. Have you noticed that? Weeds sprout up very quickly. And they can quickly, you know, make a place look like it's full, but it's just full of weeds. Weeds even have pretty flowers. There's lots of weeds that have pretty flowers. So what happens then in this whole idea of, you know, I've got to achieve, 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 we then avoid deep, honest relationships in our home and our service. Because we start to see one situation as really good, one situation as really bad. And then we fall into these patterns where people end up being surrounded by, not disciples and followers, but I'm sorry to use this word, sycophants who maintain an illusion, that same illusion further, because also they get to be the center of the world by doing that. And then again, we receive that because that's what we ask Krishna for through our behavior and what we're thinking. Now, this might sound like, wow, it's really like really gone into this a lot and thinking about it. And the reason I have is because it seems to be a problem that keeps arising over and over and over again. We have this dual thing. There's not support and space and encouragement for people to be honest. At the same time, we don't invite that. We don't say we want that space to be honest, right? So it's just something that really just to think about, that through our virtual headset, our virtual reality headset of the mind, the thing we expose ourselves to, the people we hear from, those ultimately change how we interpret and read Shastra and how we choose what to value. Does that make sense? What do we place value in? Maybe this isn't relevant to you. Maybe you don't feel lonely. Maybe you don't even feel like, I'm not a leader of any sort and I don't resonate with this being alone at the top. Maybe you're struggling with finding taste for Krishna's name or pastimes. Maybe you're finding that it's boring. This understanding that our mind is our virtual reality headset is still important. You know, because, you know, what is boredom? What is boredom? If we looked at a definition of boredom, it's just a lack of interest, right? It's an absence of interest. And our interest is usually rooted in or generated by affection or by an aversion, right? If we're averse to something, we're not bored by it. We're usually very invested in it. Or we have interest where we have purpose and meaning. So when we're finding that our Krishna consciousness, whether it's our japa, our reading, hearing a class, associating with devotees, is getting boring, we can ask ourselves, which channel does our mind switch to in our virtual reality station? So when we lose interest, okay, when we're not finding affection, aversion, or purpose in what we're reading, what we're hearing, in our japa, in our association, where do we tend? Which channel do we switch to in our virtual reality? Which dream state do we take shelter of to spark our interest, to spark our purpose? Okay. And that interest and, you know, affection in Krishna, do you have a channel which helps you to switch on your interest and affection for Krishna? Have we created one? Have we created many? Does that make sense? What are the realities? What are the truths? And this is where this verse is important, where Vidura is saying to Maitreya Rishi, I'm so obliged to you. What does obliged mean? Obliged, what do you understand by the term obliged? Indebted. Indebted, what else? Grateful, very nice. And also bound, right? So bound by gratitude, okay? He's bound by gratitude as he has given him the pathway to give up false idea. He's taught him how to take off this virtual reality headset. Or even when you have the virtual reality headset on, you can still be connected to the outside world. Who here has AirPods? If you have AirPods, Apple AirPods, they have a noise cancellation feature where you can block out the rest of the world. I know, as devotees who do japa, you know, love them because you can block out noise and you can just focus on your japa. It's amazing, right? You're not distracted by anything. So when we have an anchor, so Vidura is by saying to Maitreya Rishi, I'm obliged. Okay, I'm grateful. I am bound to you by gratitude. Okay, I'm bound to you by gratitude. What he's saying is, I'm focusing in, I'm tuning in, and I'm going to filter out. I'm going to cancel out all the other noise. Okay, let's reset how I'm interpreting what my virtual reality is telling me. And, you know, if I'm just going to go back to the actual verse itself. But my dear sir, I'm obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance. We need a constant reminder of that, although it appears real. I'm confident. So this is the other thing. Because he's connected in gratitude, he also has confidence. Okay, confidence and faith go hand in hand. It's not a blind faith, it's a faith of confidence that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. Why? Because he's hearing from Maitreya. Maitreya Rishi is awake. Only an awake person can pull someone out of their sleep, isn't it? Just think about it, even at home. All right? If you're asleep and someone half asleep is trying to wake you, both of you will probably fall back to sleep. Isn't it? Have you tried even, you know, maybe sometimes you're a parent, you're trying to wake up your kids and you're half asleep yourself. You don't have energy to wake them up. They fall asleep. You might even be tempted to go, I might as well go back to sleep as well. So this can happen. But Maitreya Rishi is awake. So that's why he's saying, I'm confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up this false idea. So it takes an awake person to wake up someone who's asleep. And this is the thing. This is Maitreya, Vidura's statements to Maitreya Rishi are really expressing that he is going to be submissive with his inquiry. He's going to be submissive with his service. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to 434, Prabhupada really is quite emphatic about this. He says that the disciple must inquire, must find out from the spiritual master the specifics for their particular dynamic around what submission looks like, what inquiry looks like, and what service looks like. That it's a very personal thing. It's a very, very personal thing. And, you know, I guess where I'm trying to go with this, and I'm just looking at the clock and I know I've gone a little bit over time, is that this submission is really important. Because when we submit, that means what we're saying is, what Vidura is saying to Maitreya is, I'm going to put aside the other realities and I'm going to accept with an open heart what you are telling me. I'm going to not just listen, but I'm going to apply it. Okay? Because at the end of the day, like Vidura, we need to cast aside this virtual reality. That's what he did. He cast aside his virtual reality when he was pinched by pain so much from his family that he'd invested so much in that he thought, okay, you know what? This can't be all it's about. This is now time for me to cast aside this virtual reality. There's no role for me in this virtual reality anymore. Sometimes as devotees, we overstay our roles and relationships, thinking they have some purpose in our Krishna consciousness. And so we all have to do that and accept from someone with confidence and accept fully that Krishna will come through, but this needs to be constant. And this is what Prabhupada says in the purport, okay? He says, however, by serving the feet of great transcendentalists like Maitreya Muni and by constantly associating with them, one is enabled to give up the false idea that the soul suffers from material pangs. So it's this association that gives us the ability to take off the virtual reality headset because we see an alternative. When we're asleep, we need someone, even the alarm clock, to tell us there is a alternate reality. Am I making sense? So, you know, I think it's really just, I guess, just from this verse, you know, it's going to be New Year's Day, a fresh start, okay? If I can just invite everybody, this is something I'm also reflecting on much more, is just being more honest with ourselves. Because when we are dishonest with ourselves, then we create new realities and find a new reality, because maybe the old realities we had in our headset are boring us. But instead of doing that, by being honest with ourselves, we'll realize, actually, is this new narrative I'm putting in my life really going to make me happy? I've been chasing after this for so long. Let me actually just take shelter. Revisit the relationships where you've made a commitment to take shelter, to take shiksha, to hear, to accept. Revisit the comments that have been made where you rejected them wholeheartedly, thinking they were completely wrong. Maybe there was some truth in them. Maybe somebody was, you know, setting off an alarm clock to help wake us up. This is a really, every verse is so rich and there's so much in there. But yeah, let's give up our false ideas and remove these virtual reality headsets. The mind can keep us tricked for a very, very long time. Keeping ourselves protected from unnecessary new stories is not fanaticism, it's science. Any comments, any questions, any realizations, corrections?
It's referring to Bhagavad Gita. It says, it's chapter 2, text 14. O son of Kunti, the non-appearance of happiness and distress are like the winter and the disappearance of summer and season in due course. They are like winter and summer seasons. Then they rise from sense perception. O scion of Bharat, one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed.
Mm-hmm. Which calls for that.
You're trying to find out
what it says, what appears real.
Mm.
And I'm serving your lotus feet. He's becoming fixed, as it says in this thing. Let me tolerate them without being disturbed. Okay. That's it.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Dina Diadranath.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. I wanted to know more about cause and effect. So you spoke about what the convention is of us at the center, but what is the right way of seeing cause and effect? Because I've heard different things that just see everything as Krishna's mercy and mm-hmm. what's Krishna trying to tell me. And I guess maybe it's a twofold question, but because you were talking a lot about the mind, I was also trying to connect the mind with the concept of cause, because in the 11th canto, the song of the Avanti Brahma, there's that verse that describes, should I just read the quote?
Yeah.
So the Brahmana said, "These people are not the cause of my happiness and distress, neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress mm-hmm. and perpetuates the rotation of material life." So I just wanted to see how that all fits together with cause and effect.
Yeah, so it actually resonates exactly with this verse and what we're talking about, that the mind is creating a virtual reality for us, okay? And it's that virtual reality that gives us happiness and distress. How much do we cling to the story that the mind's telling us? You know, something I will tell patients, whether they're people of faith or not of faith, just simply telling them that you're not your mind. Your thoughts are not you. You have thoughts. You have feelings, okay? But the fact that you have them means there's a you which can separate from the mind. So this is what virtual means. Virtual reality means it feels real. So it's virtually real. Does that make sense? But it's not real. So it very much fits with that, because our happiness and distress is very much based on what we interpret as in our favor or not in our favor. But actually, ultimately, if we accept that Krishna's always in our favor, then those things that just appear to be favorable or unfavorable, we will always receive as this is something that's there to help me grow. Even though this is painful, it's there to help me grow. This is pleasurable, it's there to help me grow. But what growth? You know, not growth to somebody who's been, am I growing in popularity? No, that's not the growth we're looking for. Am I growing in being known to be a good person? That's not even the growth that we're looking for. Is my taste increasing? Is my surrender increasing? Is my affection and affinity to wanting to hear, to wanting to serve, and really serve, to be of service, not have a service. We get so caught up in, oh, have I got service? Oh, it's really hard to get service. I hear this, I get a service. It's not something to have. You know, it's something to be of service. So, yeah, definitely this whole cause and effect is, you know, when we rely too much on the mind as the seat of the cause and effect, we forget. But like I was saying at the start, there's a difference between being the center of the world and being accountable. Being accountable means I recognize myself as a cog in a series of other cogs and pattern and cooperation. Okay, and ultimately there's somebody who oversees how all the cogs work, and this person is loving and kind, and I'm an important cog who's loved and who's reciprocated with constantly. But I'm a cog, I'm not the center. And that helps us to be balanced. And this honesty, honest reflection, helps us to be accountable. And it's always a little bit painful, but it's far less painful than having to keep living the different virtual realities. Sometimes it just takes a long time to admit that to ourselves. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
I think I have a question, but it might be a loaded one, and I don't know if we have time for that.
Well, I mean, everybody has the choice to leave whenever they want. So.
Okay, so being the center, so we are the one. We're God, right? We're God, but certainly not the supreme God. I think it'd be good to have an honest, healthy discussion around this, because technically speaking, we are parts, as we all know, we're God, in a sense, that we're
yes.
part.
Which is what Vidura asked, Maitreya.
Very small g.
Yeah.
So, you know, we get upset when we hear that people say that they are God. I mean, we just need to put it into context, you know, that you may be God, but a small g. and I can accept that I'm a small God without a tinge of indifference towards the Supreme, not a tinge. So the same way, maybe we can assert this point. All right, you're God, but with a small g, instead of saying, no, you're not. You know what I mean? I think that's the kind of discussion I think we can have.
I agree. I mean, but this comes with some maturity and acceptance, you know. It takes time. When we come to Krishna consciousness in the beginning, we have this utsahamai, this raw enthusiasm. And a lot of that raw enthusiasm is about creating a Krishna conscious identity very quickly, very rapidly. We want to disconnect from, oh, I don't want to be considered somebody in Maya. I want to be somebody who's Krishna conscious, right? And we quickly, this is part of, you know, with the Kanishtha, the reason the divisions are seen is we want to feel safe in our pen. So we put the walls up. So we very strongly put up, okay, impersonalists, those who think they're God, this is bad, okay, oh. Affection, relationships, bad. You know, all of these things, we make up these walls. We all put different walls up, okay? Someone might go, okay, working, bad. You know, women, bad. Men, bad. Whatever, having children, bad, you know. It's like I have, you know, people, lots of people have said, over the years even still, it will always happen. Oh, from what I've seen, it seems to be better to just be alone if you want to be Krishna conscious. I'm like, no, really? It's actually easier to stay in illusion that you're Krishna conscious if you're alone because you don't have to cooperate with anybody, you know? So, but as we read more, hear more, start to actually feel more secure. Oh, I have some relationship with Krishna. It's not perfect yet, but I'm feeling some relationship with him. Then we're not so disturbed when other people may not have such a clear understanding, and we can gently and lovingly explain to them, yes, you are, but with a small g, you know? Just like Maitreya Rishi. It actually describes really nicely how, and Prabhupada describes it so nicely. He says, Maitreya Rishi, when he comes upon Uddhava and Krishna, although he's not a pure devotee, you know, although he's an impersonalist, he has some affection. Even impersonalists have some affection for the universal form of God, some affection for creation and something substantial. So, and it's Prabhupada describes how he's Maitreya Rishi kind of is showing his interest, his head is tilted to the side, and he's affectionately listening. He's listening, and because he's sincerely listening, and he has some affection for Krishna, he has some affection for Uddhava, and he's sincerely listening. That sincerity means he's then captivated by that conversation. He's immersed. And as he's immersed in that conversation, because Krishna doesn't go, oh, you're a Mayavadi, get out, what are you doing? I'm having a private conversation with Uddhav. He doesn't say that. He doesn't get rid of Maitreya Rishi. Neither does Uddhav. Uddhav doesn't say, oh, who are you? Leave. You know, this is a conversation between A and B. You know, no space for C. He doesn't say, it's just, they know he's there. And so he's part of the conversation. And in this way, because he's sincerely listening, he then accepts he's God with a small G, and actually Krishna's God with a big G, and then actually Krishna's more than God with a big G, he's Krishna's Krishna. And I should love Krishna for, and I want to love Krishna for who he is, not because he's God. Because that's the residence of Vrindavan, right? They don't care, they don't even know he's God. They're happy to forget he's God. They don't need to know he's God to love him. They don't need to know anything. He can be, for them, he can be the most mischievous, you know, making mess, you know, making people cry, stealing things. He can break all societal boundaries. They'll still love him. He doesn't have to even be a perfect God. Is that okay?
Thank you. Mine was just more of a reflection. As you were saying, you know, we aren't Krishna conscious. We become Krishna conscious. It's a state of being. And it just reminded me of like human beings, like the term human being. We're not actually humans. We're trying to be humans. And it's like that reflection of people think we're humans trying to have spiritual experiences, as opposed to realizing we're spiritual souls having a human experience. And so we need to be tuning into more spiritual stimuli to give ourselves the satisfaction we actually want, as opposed to the things we think that will derive pleasure that's material.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is what devotional service does. All of the activities of devotional service, the first thing they do is they change the story on the virtual reality headset to our real story. And then we can take it off. Mataji?
Mine is actually a question.
Sure.
So, from what I understood, Satchinanda Maharaj said that when he chants, he becomes association or connection with Krishna only when Krishna is merciful to give this to him. That's what I understood.
Yeah, our acharyas say the same thing, that our ability to chant is actually really dependent on Krishna's mercy.
So I was wondering if the same applies when it comes to our mind and actually controlling it, because we have a lot of things we could do, but maybe all these doing, I was wondering how much we can actually go, how much we can do without Krishna's mercy.
Mm.
So where is our doing and where is Krishna's mercy? And I'm a bit...
The age-old question. How hard do I have to try before Krishna's impressed? Actually, that's with everything, whether it's controlling the mind, doing our job, doing our service, you know, associating with loved ones, being able to read Shastra, everything. Ultimately, Prabhupada says nothing is successful until Krishna casts his merciful glance. But we try. When we show Krishna that the areas where I'm struggling, I'm making an endeavor to be better there, okay, so that I don't keep falling into this trap, that is what attracts him. That is ultimately what attracts him. Aren't we all the same? Being, you know, gods with a little G, aren't we all the same? We can resonate with that. That somebody who hasn't done something for us perfectly continues to keep trying to do it, we are endeared by that trying, right? You see, if you're a parent and you see your child is learning to walk and you really want them to run towards you because you're feeling, I will feel so loved if my child just runs to me, okay? But when they're learning to walk, they will walk, drop, walk, drop, walk, drop. But you're so endeared by the fact that that child is trying to get to you, you will run to them, give them a lending finger and help them to come to you. So this is what Krishna does. He's endeared by our attempts to come to him. Whether we are blind, deaf, in illusion, puffed up, doesn't matter. We try. Whether we're successful, whether we're failing miserably, whether the whole world thinks we're the most perfect devotee or nobody recognizes a single speck of our devotion, are we still going to try and run to him? And then he comes towards us and he just gives us just a little finger to hold on to. And then everything becomes perfect. But we do a lot of this through the spiritual master. Prabhupada, time and time again, he will give explanations on how to control the mind. And then he will very quickly say, but if you surrender to the spiritual master, the mind comes under complete control immediately. Because you're accepting not the virtual reality, but reality as represented by someone who's awake. When we're asleep, in the dream, you know, you might be having a horror type dream, you might be having a pleasurable dream, but the person who's awake is saying, get up, whatever you're experiencing there is not real. They're able to even tell you, come on, you've got this to look forward to, you've got this to look forward to, I'm cooking this for you, I'm making this for you. So this is it, this is when we read Shastra. Prabhupada's our spiritual master. For all of us, he's our Jagat Guru, he's our founder Acharya. He is the person, he's the guru at whose feet all gurus sit. Okay? He is ultimately the person who brings us to Krishna consciousness first, always. And he's always the anchor we can come back to, no matter how many disruptions we see around us. Okay? And we can trust his words because he gives it as it is. And so if we are willing to look through the eyes of Shastra and Srila Prabhupada's purports, then the mind can come under control very, very, very quickly, coupled with honest reflection. I think we should stop. Breakfast time? Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.